morning, everyone. We're going to call the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee meeting to order. Representative Albright, could I have a motion on the minutes, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and yes, I would move the minutes from, just a moment as I put my glasses on. Oh, there you are. From March 17th.
Thank you. Representative Albright moves the minutes from March 17th. Any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are adopted. That, members, the first bill that we will go through on the agenda today is House File 3436. With that, welcome to the committee, Representative Franson. And I will go ahead and move House File 3436 and make a motion that it be referred to the Committee on HHS Reform. With that, to your bill, Representative Franson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, members, for taking the time to hear our bill today. Last month, the new Select Committee on Affordable Child Care was formed based on stories we have heard around the states about the lack of availability of care and the high costs of both receiving child care and providing it. Our committee, which included Representative Tama Tice and Representative Joe Mullery, who sit on your committee, came together to truly listen to the voices of parents, providers, and communities to learn about the issues facing child care across the state. We engaged with about 200 people in seven communities, and Representative O'Driscoll attended one of those meetings in Waite Park. What we learned confirmed stories we have heard in each and every one of our districts. The loss of over 3,000 in-home providers over the last decade is putting pressure on families who can't find care and is putting economic strain on our communities, especially in greater Minnesota, that can't attract workers because child care simply doesn't exist. At the same time, child care costs tend to be high for families, even though income has stayed the same for providers over the years, because running a child care business can be costly, time-consuming, and requires lots of sacrifice. This is a very real experience for families in every part of the state. Our committee took into account the voices of each and every person who talked to us on tour or contacted us outside of that. We worked to come up with short-term and forward-looking solutions in response to the great dialogue we had. Yesterday, we unveiled a bipartisan package that includes provisions to help stop the shortage and encourage business development. In addition, the bill before you would create a task force to look into long-term solutions relating to cost and access with all voices at the table. Based on what we heard across the state, the issue of cost and access is complex and needs careful vetting and unpacking, while ensuring our nation-leading quality and safety standards remain. We recognize that with such a short time period, from our last tour on March 2nd to today, we cannot change the entire system, but we can start. And we are making a commitment to our state that we are in it for the long haul. When child care thrives, our state thrives. It is truly the building block of our economy. We have received great feedback from child care providers on this legislation, and now I'd like to introduce you to Tracy Stengel, also a child care provider. Tracy.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tracy Stengel, and I am a licensed family child care from Mankato and the president of Minnesota Association of Child Care Professionals, MACCP. MACCP is a voluntary association of licensed family child care providers whose mission is to strengthen the family child care profession by advocating for policy improvements, offering additional support and services to providers, and by promoting family child care as an exceptional option for quality care and early childhood education. MACCP supports HF 3436, a proposal to form a task force that we hope will address the many issues contributing to the high cost and shortage of child care across Minnesota. When the Select Committee of Affordable Child Care held town hall listening sessions across Minnesota, they heard directly from parents struggling to find and afford childcare. They also heard from providers struggling with increasing demands of running a licensed family childcare business, including increased paperwork, increased training requirements with redundant material, ever-changing regulation and changing interpretations of existing regulation, increased burden and requirements for the providers, family members, higher operating costs, increased liability, yet fewer options for liability and homeowners insurance, an increasingly adversarial oversight process at times with the Department of Human Services and some county licensors. Layer after layer of bureaucracy that can make getting an answer to even a simple question or clarification on a rule or statute difficult at times. These increasing demands have played a key role in the loss of thousands of child care providers over the last decade. We can't have affordable and accessible child care in Minnesota if we don't stop this continued loss of providers that has averaged out to more than one per day over the last decade. We also need to find ways to bring more loving and qualified caregivers into this profession. To address this, the Select Committee released a proposal that will alleviate some of the burdens providers have struggled with. But it's a short session and they can't fix it all at once. This is a complex issue and Minnesota families and providers alike deserve well thought out and properly vetted solutions to turn this around and we believe this task force can be that solution. We strongly support a task force that includes the perspective of family child care providers and are willing to travel and absorb costs out of our own pockets if necessary to ensure we are a part of this ongoing discussion. We encourage the committee members to take time this legislative session to reach out to parents and caregivers in your district to hear firsthand the struggle it can be to find care. Providers and the families we serve need your support and assistance in resolving this child care crisis, and you can take the first step by voting to support the formation of this new task force today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stengel, for your testimony. Representative Franson, do you have any other testifiers?
I do not believe so.
Excellent. Thank you. Members, is there any questions or discussion? Seeing none, is there anyone else that wishes to offer testimony on this bill today? See someone making their way down to the testifiers table. Welcome to the committee. If you would just introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Barb Wagner and I am the executive director of the Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association. If you give me just a second. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. Again, as I said, my name is Barb Wagner, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association. We are a nonprofit association who supports family providers in their roles through recognition, training, and other resources. I have been in this position for only 9 months, and I have spoken with providers both in Greater Minnesota and in the metro area, and their concerns are all similar. They are concerned about keeping up with the demands of paperwork, the availability of training to meet all the hours that they need to partake in, the upcoming impact of the Child Development Block Grant, and how universal pre-K will impact the business they've worked so hard to build. Family child care is an important part of our communities. Thousands of Minnesota families rely on this type of care to provide not only a loving and nurturing environment for their children, but also an environment where they can learn and explore in the comfort of a safe environment that provides quality learning and interactions. Family child care is an affordable option for many families and often meets those needs for families that are looking for flex care or are looking for close to home child care as well. As a new mother many, many years ago, I chose family child care for my newborn knowing that she would be in a setting where the ratios were smaller, she would be in a home-like environment and benefit from the mixed age group setting. Not only that, but I appreciated the fact that she'd be attending a child care program with other children in her community that she'd be going to school with. It was a win-win. I was able to go to work knowing that my daughter was well cared for. I was so impressed with the child care program that she was in that just 2 years later, I decided to do family child care. Since then, I provided in-home care for 10 years, loved every minute of it. And since then, I also played a variety of other roles, but now here I am. I'm fortunate enough to be the executive director of the MLFCCA, and I'm very excited to be able to be in this role to help support providers. The Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association fully supports Bill 3436 and thanks those that were instrumental in drafting it. It is encouraging that there are others that see the value of family child care and the impact that it has on our communities and on the development of young children. Additionally, I would also like to pose the question that while this is not necessarily the place to discuss this, I do want to pose the question for further thought down the road about the impact on universal preschool, because we do worry about what the 3 and 4-year-olds are going to do and how they're going to spend their time before, after school, and on summer days. Again, thank you so much for your time, and I thank you for your support of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Wagner. Members, any final questions or discussion? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the author. And because I guess there are a couple of members of the task force or the working group that you had this summer and during the interim, but most of us aren't dealing with these issues on our daily lives. And just looking over some of the letters of testimony that were in our packets today, could you just kind of address some of the overregulation and requirements that child care providers have to deal with?
You know what? I will defer to Tracy, who is a licensed child care provider.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Welcome back, Ms. Stengel. If you would just reintroduce yourself for the record, please.
My name is Tracy Stengel from Mankato, Minnesota, and I am a current child care provider. Some of the regulations that continue to be taxing on providers is some of the training, and not the fact that it's required or that there's training required with it, but one of the things is trying to afford that training and also finding a training that's accessible to us in a timely fashion. That is some of the information, but some of the over-regulation might be a big word for the testimony that you have, except for the fact that when we do have issues that come up where someone has been written up for something in their home, it is almost close to impossible sometimes to get either a clear definition of that rule and to make sure that sometimes the licensors in the counties interpret it completely different than what DHS or what the law is written. And that's where it gets to be more problematic because, in fact, I was just at a training yesterday and I heard someone down the way say, I can't take my supervisory for safety training online because my county won't allow it. Well, when you read the statute, it clearly allows you to take any training that's available as long as it's MNCPD training. So you can take as much training as you want. And in that county, which is my county, I have had that same conversation with the same licensor, but yet they're still being told they can't take that. So over-regulated in a sense, but yet sometimes it's just a clear definition and the ability for us to get that clear definition either through DHS, because I've had to contact DHS and waiting to get that cleared up is sometimes a little lengthier than what we have time for.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as was mentioned in Representative Franson's setup, we did have the opportunity in central Minnesota to bring together Representative Tice, myself, Representative Knobloch, Representative Howe, and others to hear from daycare providers and child care providers. I'd like to underscore a couple things I learned from that. Number one, we have a drastic shortage in this state right now. of providers who are willing to take infants. We all start out as infants, and we progress to the toddler stage and to the young child stage. And if we don't have providers right now at the infant stage because of the concerns that the providers have and the shortage that we're seeing, it's going to create all kinds of problems within the system. And I think that that is something that, that the task force will be looking at, which was just an extremely eye-opening experience for me. I've also heard stories from folks who were up and at them at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning to ready their families to get their day going so that they could invite other family members from their clients and from their customers into their home to be able to provide that child care. Oftentimes their days didn't end until 6 or 6:30. When our meeting started, many of them were there ready to share their thoughts and needed to leave to get home to ready their homes and their families for the next day. And so we had just a wall-to-wall, standing room only, outcry or outpouring of people who wanted to talk about this issue. Well, I knew we had troubles. I learned a lot that day. And Representative Franson, thank you, and the members of the task force. And I know Representative Mueller isn't here, but I would still like to thank him for being a part of that and coming to St. Cloud to listen and to hear with what the folks in my area had to say. So I wish you well, and I will be voting in favor of this today because I think it's certainly something that helps to benefit Minnesota, our families, and our small businesses. Thank you, Representative Franson.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to say a few words as well. It was an incredibly eye-opening situation. I'm pretty far removed from having to have child care. My kids are 30 and 33. So I'm hoping I have grandchildren to do this, not children.
You'll be their
child care. I know. But some of the things we did learn was a lot about the streamlining, and it was about interpretations and what the difference was from county to county. One that I think I heard right away was about locking a door. One caregiver was told she couldn't lock her door, but the reason she wanted to is because it made her feel safer. And I know my sister-in-law did daycare for many years, and she had a kid who was basically an escape artist. I mean, she could do whatever she wanted, and if she didn't have the door locked, that he was out. He was out. And I mean, we all know how fast kids move, and especially when you're watching, you know, more than one. It's quite a task to keep these kids in line. And that's just one example of the different interpretations we were hearing, and it truly went across the board. I wish Representative Mulry was here because he's the one that talked about swaddling. What does that mean? What can you do? What can't you do? And what we heard from several folks is they don't want infants anymore. If we don't have infant child care, moms are staying home, and they're not going back to their jobs. And they're going to either have to find somebody to hire rather than just have a leave if moms can't go back until the child is a certain age. I just didn't realize that holding a baby was such a big deal. I mean, I think babies need that contact, and yet you can't. And if the child falls asleep, you better be putting them in a bed. You can't use a monitor. But then again, I'm not really sure that's true. I think that's one of the things that we're missing in interpretations, again, what you can and cannot do. So I'm confused. I can't imagine what the providers are going through. One of the things that we heard that is probably a roadblock is it takes a year and a half to get a license. And who can wait that long? I mean, you can't find a provider to take care of your child, for one thing. And if you do have one in daycare already and you want to have another kid, you better be talking to your daycare provider before you get pregnant. What the heck is that all about? Because they can only take so many infants, and people don't want to take infants. So not only does it affect so many other things, but now if you want to have a larger family, you got to check with your child provider first. And they'll tell you when you can have a baby because they already have a waiting list. I thought that was just absolutely crazy. But I think what's scariest most of all is many of the folks were afraid to say anything. They were afraid to give specifics because they're afraid. They're afraid that the next day they're going to have a licensor at the door saying, you're in violation of something. And to me, that is the most egregious part of it all. They're simply scared. And I'm not meaning they're just saying it. They are scared. They don't want to give names. They don't want to tell specific incidences. I mean, this is just, we're afraid to talk. And I just, that just makes me incredibly angry that we would have something like that going around child care. And then let's talk about training. Somebody in rural areas, but I think it also goes to the metro too. You're very, your training is at a very specific time slot. And yes, these women are working from 5:30 to 6:30, 5:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. And then you got to do training. You don't have time for your family. You don't hardly have time to make dinner. And so we really aren't looking at what some of the possibilities are for them. And I think, too, having somebody come in and watch your kids is just as scary as anything else because, I mean, it's this is why I'm doing what I'm doing and I'm not doing daycare. And also, if there is something to be found or if they do have, you get written up for something, but you're found, it's found to not be accurate that, you know, you really aren't in violation, it takes forever to get that violation off your record. It still stays there. So anybody who checks you out will see that, yes, you had a violation. It probably, nothing ever happened because it really wasn't a violation, but it shows up in your record forever. And I think what we're doing is just absolutely egregious. But I think what we found out most of all is we really aren't doing them a justice in that we haven't been paying particular attention to it. Deed just came out with their report. There's 96,000 job openings, meaning that they're looking for that many workers. And yet, if you have to talk to a child care provider to find out when you can get pregnant, is it a wonder why people are staying home to watch their kids? I mean, we're just not doing our economy any good when we forget about how important child care is and what our young folks really need to go through. It wasn't like that when I had babies. Your neighbor down the street just watched them. It was no big deal. And they survived. So I just really am very proud to be a part of this group and also thank Representative Franson for bringing it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tice. Ms. Stengel, you had a follow-up?
I just wanted to touch on the infant issue. Currently, I don't have an infant opening until 2017. I have people contacting me on Facebook and keeping in touch with me. I have 6 people on my waiting list. I finally just accepted someone for the 2017 June opening, and I had a mom walk in my door telling me that she's 3 months pregnant, and I have 2 other kids, so I have to tell her, technically I should tell her, that she needs to find care for her other kids, a mom that's been with me for over 8 to 10 years, and that's how difficult it is to find child care for an infant right now, and mainly a lot of people quit taking infants because of the whole swaddling and putting safe sleep practices, even though safe sleep practices are, you know, and what they were doing. But in our county, they basically told us that you should be able to bounce a quarter off that bed in order to have that kid lay down in that bed. That's almost impossible to figure out with those pack and plays and cribs. And that was one of the reasons why they were too scared, because it was just a huge liability, because if they walked in and your baby just fell asleep and you were holding it, you were going to get a $250 fine, suspension of your license, and your parents are going to have to find other child care for a while until they can figure it out whether you were really negligent or not.
Thank you, Ms. Stengel. Any final member discussion? Seeing none, thank you, Representative France, for this bill. It seems like this task force has a lot of timely, pertinent, and very important work to do. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 3436 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. House File 3436 is on its way to HHS reform. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
With that, we will bring back to the committee, it seems like one of our favorite members this year, Representative Zerwas. Welcome back. Looks like we have House File 978 this morning, and I will make a motion. I have HHS Finance. Is that what you have as well?
Public Safety, I believe. No, Public Safety doesn't want to see it. HHS Finance, I believe.
Excellent. With that, I will make a motion that House File 978 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Mr. Bill, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 978 is a bill for genetic counselor licensing. It comes to the Committee on Government Operations because it creates an advisory council to advise the Board of Medical Practice, which is common practice for these types of licensure bills. There is an A3 amendment in your packet, but there's a little bit of confusion on whether or not that would apply to this bill. The Sunset Commission would apply to this bill since it is since it's an advisory council to the Board of Medical Practice, those generally are created in perpetuity. So because of that little bit of confusion, I'm going to hold off on offering that amendment today, and we're going to reassess, and if we add it, we'll add it in HHS finance.
Members, any questions to the bill? I guess Representative Zeros, do you have any testifiers today?
Hi, Mr. Chair, members, in respect for the committee's time, I have testifiers that are genetic counselors and other folks that can answer questions if members of the committee have questions. The purview of government operations on this bill at this point is just in the creation of that advisory council. If the committee would like more information on what that looks like, as far as advising the Board of Medical Practice, we can certainly have testifiers to answer those questions. Otherwise, I'm just going to try to go as smoothly as possible.
Perfect. Love it. Is there anyone in the public that does wish to testify on this? Seeing none, we'll go to Representative Nelson.
Where was it? Mr. Chair, on page 3, I know this isn't our purview, but on page 3, line 3.36, it creates a misdemeanor for violation of sanctions. Is this going to public safety?
Representative,
that, there hasn't, it needs to probably go there.
So I will just say it's our understanding in talking with public safety, they said they did not need to see it. We can do it one of two ways. I mean, since we're approaching deadlines, I mean, if you'd rather be safe, we can send it to public safety. We can send it to HHS finance, and you can move it on the floor back to public safety. Or we could send it to public safety, and if they say no, we could then send it to HHS finance on the floor. I mean, I'll defer to you, Representative Zerwas. I mean, it does say that there are sanctions in this.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Nelson, that was my understanding because of the criminal penalty that it would want, that public safety would want to see it. As much as I love being as expedient as possible, I think what I would request of the committee is to refer it to public safety, and if Chair Cornish wishes not to see it, then I will make a motion to refer it on the floor, and Chair Cornish can, on the floor, say that his committee does not need to see this. I would rather do that than get caught with a deadline issue, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure, because of the short deadlines, that we don't inadvertently, by not sending it there, come up after deadlines and cause the bill to go down because of that.
Mm-hmm. So, Representative Zerwas, if it's okay with you, I'm happy to amend my motion and send it to public safety if that works for you.
Mr. Chair, members, and I'll work very closely with Chair Cornish and his committee administrator in meeting our deadline obligations, and we're going to hope we get it done.
All right. With that, I'll amend my motion to House File 978 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. Any other member questions or discussion to the bill? Seeing none, I will renew my amended motion that House File 978 be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Zeros.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Next up, we have Representative Pugh, and yeah. Representative Pugh, once you're ready, you can go ahead and make a motion on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of my committee. I move that my bill, House File 2757, be referred to the General Register.
Representative Pugh moves that House File 2757 be referred to the General Register.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we should have an amendment, an author's amendment in the packet, so I'd like to move that first, please, the A16.
Representative Pugh moves the A16 to put the bill in the shape that she wishes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the A16, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to quickly clarify, it's a very small bill, as you can see, and this amendment is even smaller. And what this amendment did was take the word county and any reference to counties out of the bill. So we're going to be this bill is just to give cities the same authority that townships have. So thank you for hearing my bill, House File 2757 today. This bill was brought to me by the League of Minnesota Cities, which has 834 member cities, all of which support this bill. The bill was introduced at the request of one of the cities that I represent, the City of Orono. And with me today is the Community Development Director, Jeremy Barnhart, and I'll ask him to please speak to what the reason that this bill even came to be in just a little bit. So it's interesting, I just learned yesterday that predating statehood, the partition fence law was crafted to help disputes between adjoining landowners by requiring them to share the cost of constructing fences under certain circumstances. The law is generally used in rural areas where fences are required to retain and constrain livestock, although it applies throughout the state, including in the metro. Recently, a few landowners in suburban areas used the partition fence law to force cities to appoint fence viewers. Who would have known? to go through a costly review process over fence disputes in residential suburban subdivisions. This obviously really wasn't what the law was intended for so long ago. So currently, law grants townships the ability to pass a fence ordinance that preempts partition fence law and gives them the ability to exempt parcels of land less than 20 acres from the law. Cities currently don't have this right, and so this particular bill allows cities the same authority that townships have under the law. So, yes, I think what I'll do is ask Jeremy to just speak a little bit to his experience and what it was that generated the need for this bill.
Welcome to the committee, sir. If you would just introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Jeremy Barnhart, City of Orono. The partition fence regulation impacted the City of Orono in that one property owner, in dispute with his neighbor, requested the city view a fence between properties to determine if it was a partition fence. To be clear, regardless of our fence ordinance, and we do have an ordinance that regulates fence height and fence location, if a resident requests a fence viewer, this law requires us to provide one, which we learned last summer. The city named fence viewers, who happen to be two council members who reluctantly chose to be fence viewers, and these council members inspected the property. The fence viewers determined that the fence wasn't a partition fence and wasn't subject to the statute. However, the neighbor disagreed when originating the request, disagreed and initiated a lawsuit against the city. The fence viewers had found it to be a partition fence, or if the court does, both property owners would need to share in the cost of the fence because the fence would be subject to the statute. The statute allows townships to exempt properties that are less than 20 acres in size, and I believe those are generally those properties that were subdivided for uses other than agriculture. The city would like the same opportunity. Orono takes a hands-off approach to fencing. While we regulate fence height and location, we don't require permits. The partition fence statute requires the city to become involved. Orono and other cities would benefit from similar consideration by not having to insert ourselves into neighborhood disputes. This is the second city that I've been kind of involved with fence viewers. I was worked with the city of Elk River a couple summers ago, and we had to appoint fence viewers and kind of initiate ourselves into another neighborhood dispute. So that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, any questions or discussion to the bill? Representative Mallory. Yes, you were on the line.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember actually handling those disputes and being involved in requiring the split on cost. But two things. where is the real estate section of the Bar Association on this first, and where is the, I can't remember the name of the local government section of the Bar Association, but anyhow, that's what, I can't think of their title, but there's two sections of the Bar Association that would be involved in this, and I'm wondering if they approve, disapprove, what, have you even talked to them, because it affects them.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mulroy. Actually, I haven't heard from them. I don't have a specific answer to your question, but there's been no controversy at all. In fact, the only controversy was minor, was yesterday when I met with the Farm Bureau, I met with the Farmers Union, and I also met with Cattlemen's. And the only concern that has surfaced was with regard to it being so expansive as to include counties. So that was the purpose for the author's amendment. And the only experience that has been brought to my attention that we've had with regard to this issue is in Elk River, ironically, and in Orno. I'm not aware, nor was a single member of the League of Minnesota Cities, so the 834. No one surfaced a concern.
Representative Mulroy.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't concerned about the cities. I'm asking, and before you get to the floor, I certainly would like to have an answer from the Bar Association. I remember going to seminars as a member of the real property section on this particular statute, and so I'd like to know where they stand on it, both the two sections.
Thank you, Representative Mulroy. Is there anyone from the Bar Association here today? Not seeing anyone jump up. Representative Pugh, perhaps on what's on the general register, you could reach out and get their position on the bill as well, maybe to help alleviate Representative Mulroy's concerns or questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Mulroy, I'll definitely do that, and I'll let you know.
Any other member questions or discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Pugh renews her motion that House File 2757 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is adopted. House File 2757 is on its way to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And the last bill on the agenda for today is Representative Runbeck. Representative Runbeck, once you're settled in up there, go ahead and make a motion on your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3024, and there is an author's amendment. I believe that's in the packet.
Okay, Representative Runbeck moves House File 3024 to the Committee on State Government Finance. We have an author's amendment, the A16, in the packet. And just so members are aware, the Senate language was, I believe, posted in air, but this is identical language on the website. Representative Nelson, just to clarify, are you okay? We had the wrong amendment posted, but the language was posted.
Don't have a problem.
Thumbs up. Thank you. Representative Runbeck moves the A16. Any discussion to put the bill in the shape the author wishes? Seeing none, all in favor of the A16, please say aye. Mm-hmm. Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Runbeck, to your bill as amended.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would call this a streamlining bill, a technical bill, and a lot of detail. I swear I didn't understand how much is involved in registering barbers. So thankfully we have an expert here. So I will let Thora Fisco go ahead and explain the bill.
Hi. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Thora Fisco, and I am the Executive Secretary for the Minnesota Board of Barber Examiners. I have a summary of the bill here that I'd like to share with you. This bill adds definitions, makes technical changes, and adds clarifying language throughout to help make the statute clear and understandable and to represent our current practices. There are some other significant changes, however. We'd like to eliminate the 1,500-hour apprenticeship that barbers are now subject to. Currently, to become a barber, an individual attends barber school for 1,500 hours, and that is 9 months, with a minimum of 281 hours of classroom time and 1,219 practical hours giving haircuts and shaves and working on the floor. To become eligible for a state board examination to become an apprentice barber, and then that apprentice barber moves out into the world and works under the supervision of a registered barber for an additional 1,500 hours in the barber shop. Minnesota is one of only six states that continues to require this two-tier and two-test system for barbers to become registered or licensed. And they are Minnesota, Massachusetts, Nevada, North Carolina, North Dakota, and South Dakota. And both Massachusetts and North Dakota are seeking to eliminate their apprentice requirements as well, so that to become a barber, you would go to school for the 1,500 hours where you learn about sanitation, disinfection, disease control, how to manage your tools. And then barbershops are subject to periodic inspection by the board to make sure that these items are being practiced out there in the real world. In addition, the board is seeking an additional member. We are a four-member board with three barbers and one public member, and the board would like to add an additional barber member so that we have five members. It will assist us with having a quorum for our meetings and with tie-breaking. And finally, the board is seeking to add to their statute the utilization of a credentialing agency for individuals who are applying for barber license from outside this country. We receive applications, not a lot, approximately 20 in a two-year period, so about 10 a year. But it's very difficult to verify those credentials, and there are companies out there in the world that make it their business to be able to verify credentials from foreign countries. So we would like to direct our foreign applicants through one of those credentialing agencies so we can receive a report on the credentials and help verify that they are in fact correct. Any cost incurred by the board as a result of this legislation we believe would be minimal and would be able to be absorbed in our current allocation. And with that, Mr. Chair, I can walk the members through the bill or stand for questions, whichever your preference.
Thank you, Ms. Fiscal. We will move on to member questions and see where that takes us. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And concern I had when I first read the bill, and I got it answered, but I'd like to get it put on the record, is why are they eliminating the apprenticeship part of it? And like I said, I asked Ken, the barber down here, and it was explained to me, but I'd like to get that on the record so in case somebody in the future asks, they know why.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Ms. Fisco.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, it has become increasingly difficult for our students, our new apprentice barbers, to find registered barbers to work under. It creates an employee-employer relationship, and barbers have difficulty with some of that. And so there are fewer and fewer registered barbers willing to provide that level of training and supervision.
Representative Nelson, any follow-ups?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I guess the question I'd have would be, then are they going to get this additional training as part of their initial training in school? So you said it has to do with sanitation and how to handle the tools. So they'll be getting that in place of doing it as an apprentice.
Ms. Fisco.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, yes, they currently receive that training in the barber school as well, and that will continue.
No further questions.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Being a legislature, certainly an educational experience, I'm hoping to get one by asking this question. When I grew up, my dad went to the barber and my mom went to a hairdresser. Can you explain the difference between the licensing and why they're not wanting to cosmetology and all that kind of good stuff?
Ms. Fisco.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the major difference between the two professions, barbers spend a great deal more time learning haircutting. And they do a clipper over comb style of hair cutting, so they're not using guards on their clippers. And barbers also provide the straight razor shave, which cosmetologists do not provide. Cosmetology training is 1,550 hours, and that includes manicures and pedicures, so nail work and skin work and some other items. So the barbers really are precision hair cutters, and it is the straight razor shave that is the major difference.
Did you get your education?
And I think others did as well. They're just too shell-shocked to chime in with me. So,
thank you. Any other member questions or discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Runbeck renews her motion that House File 3024 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Committee.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Thank you, Ms. Fisco. With that, members, we've completed the agenda for today. Tomorrow we have several bills on the agenda. I think a couple of Hackbarth bills, Swedzinski, and Hoppe as well. Any final member questions or discussion? Seeing none, we are adjourned.